So here they are. There are the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, to use Phil Schoenberg's analogy. And so you look at all these pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, and the question is, okay, that's good. And we can know a lot about these pieces. We can know about their suitability for septic tanks and crop yield and so forth and so on. But the question is, how are those pieces of the jigsaw puzzle interacting with one another laterally? How is water flowing through these pieces? If you put ecosystems on top of these pieces, how does it affect the ecosystems and so on? But the example that I'm going to give is systems thinking as a tool in archaeology. Okay, and what do we mean by that? Well, the example I'm going to give is from New Mexico and the San Mateo Mountains. It's an archaeological project called the Cañada Alamosa Project. And if we zoom in, we've got some magnificent high terraces. We have step surfaces. And these are the trenches that we've analyzed. And the approach I'm going to take is, we want a conclusion, but what data support that conclusion? And how does it support that conclusion? What inferences do we have to make? Like, for example, are the data representative? But more than that, what models, what warrants are we going to have in order to connect the data to the conclusions? So that's the approach I'm going to take. And whenever you start with the archaeologists, they want right away a conclusion. And so basically what they want to know is, as a soil scientist, soil geomorphologist, what can the soils tell us about the past that will help us understand the archaeology? That's what they want to know. What happened? Paleoclimate, erosion, what happened in terms of landscape evolution that would better explain the archaeological record? And so we can look at data, objective, measurable properties like sediment thickness, diagnostic soil horizons. We can use radiocarbon dates. We can look at artifacts. We can look at carbon ratios of carbon-13, carbon-12. So you get out there and you look at this landscape, and you can, delineate buried A horizons and overlying C horizons and zones of pedogenic carbonate, and you can give them names so you can develop a soil stratigraphy. And then on top of that, you put chronology. And the best chronology in this environment is buried charcoal. And then artifacts. So it's a little hard to see, but there's a vesicular basalt metate that is lying on this, what the archaeologists will call a occupational surface. That was the A horizon. That was the land surface. And somebody forgot the metate real good and probably went back and got in trouble. Where is it? Well, I don't know. And it gets buried. And there it is all these years later. And but lots of artifacts. Ceramics are really good because they persist through time. But even look at that tiny little bead that exists. And again, this is data. These are observations. And deer bone, for example. And then carbon isotopes. You go out there and you measure carbon isotopes and you get a lot of values and you draw lines and so forth. But all data, okay? Now, the question is, how do you connect the data to the conclusions? And one way of doing it, and that's the whole point of this talk, is if you think of it as a system, as a soil geomorphic system that responds to bioclimatic change. In other words, when the climate changes, the ecosystem changes. So those two are very tightly linked. All right. So one inference is this general principle that if you plot erosion and sedimentation on the y-axis, and precipitation, mean annual precipitation, on the horizontal axis, then what you see is this, from this classic paper, 1958, Langbein and Shum, is if you go to the very driest deserts in the world, not much is happening. There's no water to move things. But, and you come up through here in the United States, it'd be the Mojave and the Sonoran, but the Chihuahuan Desert, where this is right at that desert grassland boundary. And so what's happening, there's enough water to move sediment, but still there's a lack of vegetation to hold the soils in place. But as you get more and more precip, then you start getting the grasslands and the forest, and it drops. And you can't travel in time, but you can travel in space. So this is the modern Chihuahuan Desert and the boundaries, and you can look at aridity indexes, and these are all weather stations, and you can start plugging in numbers, and you can look at how this boundary between the Chihuahuan Desert and the higher semi-arid grasslands would change if climate changed. So you can cool things off 3 degrees C and it shrinks. Or you can heat things up and it expands. And that's where you really can't travel in time. You can travel in space, and you go to within the Chihuahuan Desert. And what you can see is that during periods of aridity, there's a lot of landscape instability, a lot of erosion and sedimentation. But you get more humid, you get into the grasslands, and there's more landscape stability and soil formation. So landscape stability, landscape instability, and lots of erosion and sedimentation. And again, it's the idea that there is no erosion on a golf course fairway. If you've got that landscape tied down, it stays tied down. Okay, so back to the study site and looking at the bioclimatic soil geomorphic system. Okay, so if we're looking up the valley, if we go with this model that during arid periods that you have a decline in vegetative cover, in this case grass, and that means that sediment isn't removed by the axial streams, then what that equates to is there's aggradation. That floodplain builds up with sediment. But you shift to a cooler, wetter period, you have increased vegetative cover on the uplands, and so now you have more water moving down the stream, and there's actually sediment removal. And the record for that that's taking place are these terraces that surround the floodplain. Okay, so we can look at something like this, and if we go back to the carbon isotopes, we can make inferences about what this tells us is the percent of organic matter laid down by vegetation with C4 photosynthesis. What does that mean? Well, all the grasses have a photosynthetic pathway, and you can measure the grasses running through a mass spec, and you get this value. But the surrounding woodlands and forests have a C3, and it has a different isotopic signature. And if you go down slope, you get a different isotopic signature still with the shrubs. So by looking at the organic matter in a soil and running it through the mass spec, that soil can actually remember what vegetative community existed. And so now we can say, well, we have more grass cover as you go this way because that's our C4. And what we think is that you have a periods of aridity and less grass cover. You get more and more grass cover. The landscape stabilizes. Now, this is an occupational surface. People live here for a long time. You go back into a period of aridity. Now things start moving again, erosion, sedimentation, but now you get more grasses, it's cooler and wetter, and then lo and behold, it happens one more time until you get up here. And to summarize that is on a time scale is looking at beginning, you know, some 6,000 years ago, is you have drier conditions, the system is aggrading. It stops, you have an occupational surface, people are living on that, you have an A horizon, a BK horizon, then you shift back in, and now it starts aggrading again, but then it stops some time after 2,000 years, and then it shifts back to a period of aridity, and now it starts aggrading again to about 1,000 years ago, and then some 500 years ago, the little ice age was about that time. Then now you have another period of landscape instability and erosion. And the point is, that's what the archaeologists want. That's the conclusion. That's what they want to hear. Because if they can hear that you have this grading landscape stability, instability, then they can put their archaeological record within that context. Okay? But my point is, that's the soil systems approach. It's a soil geomorphic bioclimatic system approach that allow us to use it as a tool for the archaeologist. Okay. So that's my kind of academic, you know, out in left field example. And so at this point, I'll open up for some questions, but at this point, we'll move on after I answer the questions. And Phil Schoenberger will now talk about systems as part of the soil survey at large. So any questions for me about this? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, so there are a lot of people in the paleoclimatic business, and one of the most useful are the dendrochronologists that look at tree rings. And that's a very detailed record. And so whenever you look at the soil geomorphic record, it's big and broad. And the question is, how much of a threshold do you have to reach before this big system cracks, goes over a threshold, and starts responding? So it's a much longer and much more buffered system than the more detailed, you know, systems I think that you're mentioning. Yeah. Alfred.
So how do you or how do archaeologists deal with the movement of architects in these planning soils? Who do they deal with it, and how does that correlate to your carbon-based?
Oh, artifact, especially the ceramics. I mean, they're a detrital fragment. They move like other coarse fragments. And so whenever you look at a piece of pottery, you know that the pottery predated the sediment that it exists in. So it existed before that sedimentary package is deposited, stabilizes. So any heterogenic horizons are younger than the artifacts in which those horizons would form around.
So what you're saying, the sediment is the reason, and the artifacts are adjusted in sediment, or the other way around? If you were doing timing, you know,
yeah.
What are you using?
Oh, what are we, there's been so much dating, you know, over the years in this area, using radiocarbon dating, and the archaeologist, you know, the best thing to date is corn cobs, because you know you're getting one season. So if you're looking on the other example would be a hearth where they're burning wood, not so good, because you can pick a piece of log that is 100 years old. And so that charcoal has integrated 100 years. And so, sure, you'll get a number, but it's a much broader, has broader error bars than if you have a corn cob, which basically tells you a single growing season. Okay, so, Phil, you want to come up and talk about soil systems and relate it to the agency, and also the Soil Geomorphic Institute.